Welcome to episode 36, Chokmah. That is what we're going to talk about in the beginning of this anyway. And Chokmah is Hebrew for wisdom. And we're kind of going to be doing the wisdom series here, which is Proverbs and Ecclesiastes. And actually, technically, the book of Job is part of it, but we already did the book of Job. So we're going to lightly brush over the way it fits into the picture, even though we're not going to cover the book of Job again. Like I said, this is Proverbs and Ecclesiastes, episode 36, and I'm Farrell.
And I'm Rhonda Pickering.
And we're just glad to be here. But before we get started, we're going to do a little commercial. And this is our new book coming out, Understanding Daniel's Timeline. We talked about it a little bit last time, Prophecy Unsealed. If you are familiar with our work, this is kind of the book form of a lot of the numbers of Daniel.
This is like the culmination of a lot of research over the
years. A lot of the research, a lot of things coming together to create the Daniel timeline.
So for anybody that not familiar with our work, right? God clearly designed Daniel's numbers to be unsealed only at the time of the end. For over two millennia, these numbers have persisted as a topic of considerable critical study and examination. Great biblical scholars over the centuries, such as Isaac Newton, have attempted to figure them out. For the most part, they have remained clouded in mystery until now. The keys to solving Daniel's numbers at last have been unlocked.
I prefer the word unsealed because right. In Daniel 12 it says they are sealed till the time of the end. And I believe they have been unsealed. Anyway, this book we hope to have up on our website for advanced pre-sale at a little bit of a discount to help us kind of with the publishing costs. Be nice if you guys want to have a copy of this book, if you'd kind of pre-order to help us out. That'd be wonderful. Right. That's going to be something we'd appreciate your support if you lay it out there. And we should have that up sometime this next week. Anyway.
And the books will be coming in by the end of October.
Actually, mid-October to end, supposedly. Anyway.
I'd rather beat the deadline than promise something that I can't deliver, right?
Always under-promise and over-deliver.
That's right.
Anyway, so that being said, we'll just move right on. But on the way, we wanted to just show you our website. It's Prophetic Appointments, so you know where to go. And if you see up there, if you go to shop, we might even put another tab up there that's for this books and books. But anyway, if you go to shop and find books, you'll find it.
The other reason that we wanted to show you the website right here, this particular lesson, is because the next lesson is going to be the beginning of the five lessons that we will do on the book of Isaiah. And we want everybody to be aware that these Isaiah classes on our website are already up. You can watch them anytime. You just hit start classes, and there are 28 Isaiah classes.
Very in-depth.
Very in-depth as we teach Isaiah using our book, Isaiah Illustrated. This is a 650-page color book based on the works of Dr. Avraham Gileadi. And you know, because I teach the kids, I wanted to make it colorful and easy for them to understand. The literary structures are marked. There's a commentary in there. Avraham's BYU address on the book of Isaiah verse by verse has been attached in there. So this is a huge resource for studying the book of Isaiah. And we wanted to get it out there so that you would know that there's classes available and that we are going to go ahead and put this book on sale.
During this period of time that we're teaching the Isaiah portion of the Old Testament.
Right.
And we are going to teach the class still differently than in the class. Well, it'll be similar. But it'll be a very abbreviated.
There's over 50 hours.
Yeah, it'll be a very footage. Abbreviated version that we put here in the
comments. And we got five.
Yeah. Anyway, so this book we are going to mark down. We listed it at $79.95.
Right.
We have been selling it for $69.95.
Less on our website.
But we are now going to discount it down to $59.95 during the period we're teaching the Isaiah classes.
We want everyone to have access to be able to teach Isaiah.
I just want you to understand why this book is what it is. And that is, it's full color, and it's 650 pages.
Yeah, there. And there's 150 pages of charts at the back.
It's a pretty nice hardback.
It's my magnum opus.
Yeah. It's a very wonderful study guide to Isaiah as you go, and she'll take you through the classes, and you'll be able to kind of.
So if you want the study guide, we're trying to make it as cheap as we can for everybody to pre-order so that you have it in time to teach Isaiah. That's why we're bringing it up
in this lesson. Okay, back to the material. Hokmah and Proverbs and the Ecclesiastes. We are going to just jump right in from here. True wisdom comes to each of us when we realize how little we understand about life, ourselves, and the world around us. Socrates. So Socrates was very aware that all that man can do still leaves him lacking in a fullness of wisdom. And therefore, we always find ourselves reliant upon God for wisdom. And truthfully, that is the source of wisdom. And we should always look to him for our wisdom and not try to figure it out. Well, not that we don't try to figure it out, but not rely upon the understanding of man always. So this series, the Wyndham literature, the series of what they call the wisdom literature in the Old Testament, which is Proverbs, Ecclesiastes, and actually the book of Job, kind of all complement in there.
Can I share something about wisdom? And
No, go ahead.
it was one of my favorite explanations of, you know, some people say, well, you're putting yourself down to say that you don't know anything. And then there's this controversy that goes on. And I thought it was best explained as a circle. The wisdom that we have is like a circle. And the circumference is the border of all the things that we don't know. It's the unknown. And so what's amazing is that the more your wisdom grows, the larger
you realize
the circumference is of what you don't know. Yeah. That kind of is what Socrates reminded me of.
Yeah, the bigger the circle is to learn.
Right.
So Proverbs 1 through 9, the journey to wisdom is to fear the Lord. The concept of Proverbs is kind of justice. It's kind of what you do will return to you, meaning if you give good, you will get good. It's a little bit, I hate to use this, but in the series, The Secret, we all talk about, it's quite often you try to think of, you know, the concept that the you'll get back what you sow. And basically, if you take the whole of it, that's pretty true.
Sometimes they call it the law of attraction, the law of return.
It's kind of true, and yet it's not a complete picture. And we're going to go there more later.
Right.
In fact, we're going to go there. Well, let me just jump into Proverbs 9 through 31 as kind of the collection of these wise sayings that was assembled by Solomon. Most of it's attributed to him, even though there's a lot of speculation that he was kind of the gatherer of all of these good sayings and all of these perspectives, even though he might not have wrote them all.
Right, and organized them in the wisdom format. Literature that would start with Proverbs, move on to Ecclesiastes, and then to the book of Job. And they really are kind like three stages of a play,
yes,
right?
Absolutely. And then Ecclesiastes is kind of a reality check. It doesn't always seem to work. So we take this idea of the secret, and yet it doesn't always seem to be an absolute. Sometimes we get back what we don't sow. I mean, a prime example of that would be our Lord and Savior. He did not deserve the injustice he experienced, and yet he experienced it for a different reason.
Right.
So in a sense, it didn't look just, but you have to take the whole of it into perspective. Then, obviously, Job is a prime example of the apparent contradiction. It is the long-term results that God is really looking for. It's not short-term. And anything we look to at short-term is kind of lacking, to put it mildly. It's not an absolute that the law of attraction is going to work in the short-term.
And in some ways, we learn from Job that any attempt to put God in the box of our justice and our wisdom is really vanity in the first place, because he is so much higher and so much greater than than what we understand. And yet at the same time, Proverbs kind of tries to do that. It kind of tries to put
it's definitely
the goodness of God, the good life
into definitely the rule of thumb, but it's not the absolute of the way it happens in the real world, because we do have reality that comes in where there's just this random, we call it random, it probably isn't random because we don't really believe in random, but it's kind of this seems to be luck of the odds sometimes,
which is Ecclesiastes. Yeah. We're gonna introduce the wisdom of God, and then we're gonna come in with a wait a minute, things aren't fair.
Okay, but before we jump off that too far, I want to take a little bit of a feral sidestep, just because I love to take the opportunity when we ever come across something to expand our perspective. So I am going to bring in the second verse in Proverbs, and I wrote it out for you in Hebrew, the whole verse, okay?
Holy cow.
Okay, and in Hebrew, from right to left, remember, you got to realize this is the whole verse of Hebrew. And what I'm here to show you is the fascinating depth of Hebrew. Because even though I've kind of broken into words there, you see the arrows breaking it into words, I want to show you that you can actually read it without breaking it into words.
I'm ready.
Okay? You can actually read the concepts. And do you realize that the original recording didn't have the breaks for words? When they translated Hebrew, right, there was no breaks for words. They had to...
There's no punctuation, no chapters, verses.
So this is the way it would look in the ancient tongue, so to speak, or in the ancient writings. It would look, the first or the second verse in Proverbs would look like this. And it is, you know, to work the pathway to experience the fence of protection, to cover the chaos with the revealed breath over the chaos, to make sure and protect the sun, to make sure and protect the work of God. And then in the...
Okay, did you just read the top line?
Yep.
Do it again.
I might not do it the same.
I was trying to follow
okay,
the whole thing.
But I was just going right to the left, and I read the top line to... give you a meaning. It's the work or the pathway through the door
to
see and experience the protection or covering of the chaos through the breath, the revealed breath over the chaos, and make sure to protect the authority of the highest, or to follow the will of the Father. Okay, that's just really cool. Let's just take the second line, which is in or the family, but in the work of life, the strong leader over the chaos with the authority of the son in the home of the father, or the tent of the home of the family, does the work to continue the breath. So in essence, what this second verse in Proverbs is doing is it's telling you, hey, this is the wisdom. That's what wisdom and instruction is to give us instruction of how to get through the chaos, get through the randomness, if you want to put it that way, just constantly working that. And so what I did that to show you is not only is it cool, because that second word on the top line is chokmah, which was on the first screen, which is wisdom, but it all flows into one big concept, which is bigger than the parts.
Okay, so I have a question. In your title slide, you said to know wisdom and instruction. So
that's the top line.
Right.
Know wisdom and instruction.
Well, help me understand the difference between wisdom and understanding. What are we talking
about? Okay, well, wisdom is to protect and cover the chaos by the revealed concepts. But down below, the strong, massive chaos or so is controlled or is articulated by the words of the son. And understanding being in the home, the work to continue the breath. So in essence, understanding is it's all one concept in a way, and yet it's broke into words.
Well, the reason I asked and the reason I'm playing with this in my head, okay, is because you have the wisdom which is revealing how to cover the chaos, okay? But the understanding comes in the home, and it is the work of, like, teaching it.
And yes, so, instruction.
Is yeah, the teaching. It's they're kind of different.
But isn't it beautiful the way Hebrew works? It's just all one flowing transition of communication.
Right. And the thing that I was applying it to was in Daniel, you know, the angel Gabriel comes to him and Gabriel is instructed, give the man
understanding.
And under, you know, 10 times in the book of Daniel, it says,
so help him understand the business of the family that is the work of continuing life through the revealed breath.
So the angel is bringing the knowledge down to Daniel's understanding. And so wisdom is kind of controlling the chaos, but understanding is teaching it, bringing it down in the home.
So fascinating. That's we could get lost
just
in
from
this.
From the Hebrew, yeah.
That's just amazing. And don't think that just because I just gave you a interpretation, that there isn't a complexity of depth to it.
Different ways to read it in different levels.
This is very in-depth. But as you know, the third word in the second line, or the second word in the first, third, second, or excuse me, the second word in the second line, I can do this. Second word in the second line is word. Well, we know in the book of John, in the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God, and the same was in the beginning with God. All things were made by Him, and without Him was not anything made that was made. So in the book of John, and I realized that Joseph Smith, I gave a translation differently than is recorded in the King James, but I want you to be aware that that doesn't change what the King James says. It only clarifies it in the sense that he's given us more depth of understanding. He's not necessarily negating what was written.
Most of the time,
it's like a depth of understanding he's adding to the translation, not taking from.
Right, or changing it.
Right. So you got to keep that in mind when you think of the Joseph Smith's translation, that it's not necessarily instead of, it's and.
Right.
Okay. So in the beginning was the Word, and that's by which all things were created. Well, we know that Jesus Christ is the Word by which the heavens and the eternities were created, meaning that it is the same cyclical process repeated over and over again throughout the eternities that is the act of creation. So that's what's beautiful about what we're talking about here in the Hebrew. And that was a little bit of a rabbit trail, but not really, because it is the second verse in Proverbs, okay, that I just went through. Anyway, so that being said, it's kind of fun, isn't it? Hebrew's just filled with depth in translation or in comprehension as you kind of get into it. So that was kind of a fun little detour I wanted to take, is just to walk you
wisdom
through.
Wisdom and understanding.
Wisdom, right? And understanding.
Through the Word.
Through the Word, yeah. And He is the Word, as revealed in John 1:1-3. So in Proverbs 3:1-7, my son, forget not the law, but let thy heart keep my commandments. For length of days and long life and peace shall they add to thee. Let not mercy and truth forsake thee. Bind them about thy neck, write them upon the tablet for thy heart. So shalt thou find for favor and good understanding in the sight of God and man. Trust in the Lord with all thy heart, and lean not into thy own understanding. In all thy ways acknowledge him, and he shall direct thy paths. Be not wise in thy own eyes. Fear the Lord, and depart from evil. So this gives us that concept that if you do the right thing and you follow the Lord, you know, everything's going to work out for you. Well, how does that always work? Has anybody kind of had a Job experience?
I was just going to mention that in Psalm 119, that's the center of the fifth book of Psalms. That was the whole concept, was that it is God's law that keeps us on this path. It is God's law that brings the good life. This is kind of the presentation here in Proverbs, and that we need to fear the Lord, meaning not fear, you know, that we'll be punished. No, in Hebrew, you fear not keeping God's commandments, because that's the path to good.
It's the path to success.
You fear not being on that
conceptually
path. Right.
And we're going to go a little farther down the line. I'm going to go into Ecclesiastes.
Okay.
And you're going to see that this is a generalized approach to things, but it's not always working out exactly the way we think it is. And we're going to keep going, and you'll get there eventually so you can see. But you do realize that the Lord has promises that it kind of works this way. It is the law of attraction, and yet sometimes the results are not immediate.
Right.
Okay. Honor the Lord with thy substance and with the first fruits of all thy increase. Right there is pretty beautiful. It's telling you about pay your tithes first, pay your offerings first.
Because then the rest of the harvest is blessed.
Yeah.
Right.
So shall thy barns be filled with plenty, and thy presses shall burst out with new wine. My son, despise not the chastening of the Lord, neither be weary of his correction. Now, I don't know about you, but, you know, there isn't very many of us that take correction very good.
That always reminds me of Fiddler on the Roof, right?
Yeah.
Or Debbie. Yeah.
Maybe you could bless someone else just a little bit. No, anyway, for whom the Lord loveth, he correcteth, even as a father the son who he delighteth. Now, sometimes we're not real good at that. I mean, you know, when especially with the people close to us, sometimes we're not real comfortable being corrected. But God says that he corrects those he loves. So happy is the man that findeth wisdom and the man that getteth understanding. What that's saying is the man that takes correction in concept here. We have to be in a place where we're humble enough to take this inflection or inspection of self enough to take correction. Not an easy thing to do. The world doesn't like it. None of us really like it, but we need to learn to get our egos out of the way and take correction. The curse of the Lord is the house of the wicked, but he blesses the habitation of the just. Well, this idea of justice, you know, we all kind of have a sense of justice, right? And we want...
We do when we're being crossed.
Oh, well, we do. Yeah, it's really easy to see justice when it's...
that's not
when it's hurting us. It's not so easy to see justice when we're hurting somebody else sometimes. We're not quite so aware. But I'm just pointing out that this... In the book of Proverbs, we're kind of in this place of looking at the whole picture in such a way that this is kind of the cause and effect. You know, you do good, you're going to get good. And generally, that's
the law of attraction.
Yeah, and generally, that's a good rule of thumb. In fact, it's always a good rule of thumb. But sometimes, well, we'll get there. I'm not gonna give you a spoiler yet.
Kind of, you reap what you sow.
There's a lot of
scriptures to back that up.
Okay, the ear that heareth the reproof of life abideth among the wise. Meaning, if you pay attention to those course corrections, You're going to be wise. That is the definition of wisdom.
Right.
He that refuseth instruction despiseth his own soul. Now, that's a concept. You know, if you don't take it, you don't like yourself. So to take correction is to love oneself in the sense that you care about how you turn out. You don't want to be spoiled. You don't want to be rotten fruit, if you want to put it that way. But he that heareth reproof getteth understanding, like I said. And the fear of the Lord is the instruction of wisdom, and before honor is humility. It's all the same thing.
Wow.
I've been saying.
I love that. Before honor is humility.
Yeah. So these things, these proverbs are beautiful. I mean, and yet there's more to the story, which we're going to get to when we get to Ecclesiastes. Okay. Everyone that is proud in the heart is an abomination to the Lord. Though hands join in hand, he shall not be unpunished. Ooh. Ouch. We don't like that, do we? We want a God that's just a marshmallow and loves us all the time.
Well,
he is a God who loves us all the time. It's just that sometimes love, like you said, he loveth who he correcteth. So,
well, in Isaiah, there's two great sins of God's people in the last days. And guess what the number one sin is?
Pride.
It's pride.
Yeah.
And the second one is idolatry. So yeah. We'll talk more about that when we get to Isaiah, but pride is big.
Yep. How much better is it to get wisdom than gold, and to get understanding rather than to be chosen than silver? The highway of the upright is to depart from evil. He that keepeth his ways to preserve his soul. Pride goeth before destruction, and a haughty spirit before a fall. Better is it to be of a humble spirit with the lowly than to divide the spoils with the proud. Wow, that's just a concept that is contrary to modern business philosophy, you know?
Honestly, the strong and the proud, that's our American motto.
Yeah, you know? Sometimes we get in that American motto. Now, this one I put in here just so that we could laugh about it. The hoary, or the gray head, is a crown of glory if it be found in the ways of righteousness. Now, I guess what I'm trying to say
is... Actually, it's more than gray. It's white, kind of.
So what I'm saying is... my age is my crown of glory.
There you go. You have definitely got the hoary crown.
Okay, I got this crown of glory going on. I hope it's one of wisdom.
It's the way of righteousness, too. Yeah. Wow.
I hope it's the way of righteousness. Anyway, I put that in there just kind of so that we could all have a laugh together. He that's so to anger is better than the mighty, and he that ruleth his spirit than he that taketh a city. So he's saying, you know, if you can be this great warrior, but if you have ruled your spirit, you are a mighty person.
And this is kind of interesting that this is Solomon gathering this information here.
Being a king who is...
Well, mostly I was thinking because he's David's son. And, you know, you remember from Samuel and our studies of David that whenever someone... Even if they accomplished something that might be helpful to David, if they did it by doing evil, by betraying someone, or, you know, David was just hard on that you had to rule with the Spirit of God. And he was more interested in right than in
conquest
and the result. He taketh the city. I'm just looking at this through the eyes of the son of David, you know, Solomon.
We remember David for the one mess up he did than we do for all the great and wonderful things David did.
Right, for his fall.
Yeah, right. We always remember his fall, not his magnificent rule as a king and how benevolent he was.
And his radical faithfulness to God.
I mean...
In times of trouble.
And you know, we should all pray and mourn that David can find his way out of hell, so to speak, which Joseph said he will.
And we kind of talked about that a little bit in the last time, that he's a pattern for us because we're falling too.
Okay, let's just jump on. This was a little bit uncomfortable for some of us in modern philosophy. Train up a child in the way he should go, and when he is old, he shall not depart from it. Foolishness is bound in the heart of the child, but the rod of correction shall drive him far from it. You know, modern day psychology is kind of against what the Proverbs are saying here. For as he thinketh in his heart, so shall he be. Withhold not correction from the child. For if thou beatest him with the rod, he shall not die. And thou shalt beat him with the rod and shall deliver his soul from hell. Now, I realize this is very contrary to modern thing. And I'm not trying to promote the idea that, I mean...
Yeah, anybody should beat anybody.
That's not the point. But the point is...
Discipline.
Discipline is not a bad thing. Now, I come from a different generation. I got, use the word spanked. I got spanked in my childhood, you know. And I do not look on it as abuse. I look on it as the love of my parents correcting me. And I remember as a teenager one time, I was being a little bit of a smart aleck, and my mom was standing there, and I could have easily overpowered her. And she, in my smart aleckness, she picked up a stick. She says, "You think you're too big to be beaten?" I'm like, "What?"
Just you with a stick. Mom!
And because I respected her so much, I did not run. I did not do anything. I took the wallop, and she only gave me one. She only hit me once, just to let her know, or let me know, that she still was mom. Okay? And that's a good thing. And I'm not trying to get you guys in trouble with family services or anything. But I'm just telling you that discipline is what this country is lacking just a little bit at this moment.
Can I quote DNC 121 though? DNC 1's my favorite proverb on dealing with correction in this way and discipline. It says that reproving be times of sharpness when moved upon by the Holy Spirit, never in anger.
Absolutely.
Never an anger. Okay, when moved upon by the Holy Spirit. And but this is the biggest key. Afterwards, showing forth an increase of love, lest he esteem thee to be his enemy. And so to me, you know, is if the love is bigger than the discipline, then we're going to come through it okay.
Yeah. And I absolutely know that this could be offensive to some. And if you don't agree with it, take it up with...
Time out counts for discipline.
Yeah, you know, there's different ways of discipline. You don't have to be with a
rod, like it's talking about, right?
Whatever. I just know for me personally, I knew my mom loved me. I knew I was not worried about those things. And when she disciplined me, I did not take it as abuse. I took it as love. And I'm just trying to share.
And that's the important part, yeah. You know, because there is that crossover of the line
sure.
where it's not love.
There is no question that there is abuse that goes on and parents that do it out of anger and out of, you know, a drunken stupor or who knows what. And that is not acceptable. God never is. He's not condoning.
So if you're angry.
And I got to be honest with you, the spanking's never really hurt.
Yeah, I know.
Okay. Right? It was just the concept that hurt.
Right. And you just have to remember that if you're angry, then you're the one that needs to discipline. You need to take a walk.
Yeah,
because that is never the time to discipline.
I didn't want to get hung up here. This was supposed to be.
We just had lots of kids. We're opinionated.
And I've seen people who don't discipline their children, and sometimes I'm like, I want to discipline the parent. But that's okay. I'm the side rail. Anyway, open thy mouth, judge righteously, and plead the cause of the poor and the needy. Who can find a virtuous woman? For her price is far above rubies, and the heart of her husband does safely trust in her, so that he shall have no need of spoil. She will do him good and not evil all the days of her life. Now, if you know the story behind this part of Proverbs in the end, you know that Solomon's actually writing about his great-great-grandmother.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. So, and most people don't know this, actually. Because you can't get it in the English, you have to go into the Hebrew. And on Aleph Beta, where Rabbi David Foreman is talking about Shavuot, because they read the book of Ruth on Shavuot, he has a lecture on Proverbs 31, who can find a virtuous woman. And if you're okay, I just want to mention a couple things about Proverbs 31. Number one, in the Hebrew, there are many nuances that are referring back to Ruth. Solomon's great-great-grandmother was so honored by him as a model of what a virtuous woman looks like. And if you want to see why, go back to our lesson that we did on Ruth, because she is the model of a Gentile who becomes numbered with the house of Israel. And there's a lot of things in the Hebrew that lead you to believe that Solomon was writing this for his great-great-grandmother. But the other thing that's important about this particular proverb is that it's read every Sabbath day in a Jewish home. And so most of them have this one memorized. This one is down. And because in Hebrew thought, being a mother in Israel is the greatest calling that anyone can have. A virtuous woman who is so concerned.
Takes the role.
The heritage of the Lord.
Yeah.
And there's just one more quick story. I didn't get to tell it when we were doing Psalms, but, you know, there was the idea here that is, there was a Jewish man who met someone in Israel, and I know all the names, but I'm trying not to use them. Anyway, that he saw a Mormon, and he said, you know, we like Mormons. And he said, the reason is because you love and teach your children like we do. The children are the heritage of the Lord.
It's the point of the whole thing.
Yeah, and so this honoring of fatherhood and motherhood, this kind of shines through in family. Proverbs, family.
Well, back in Psalms, that first verse, where the second verse in Proverbs, where it talked about the relationship of in the home and the family, it's all interwoven in wisdom and in the whole concept.
And again, it's that the family is the building block of of the community, which is the building block of the city, which is the building block of the nation. It starts there in the home, in the family, which was one reason I was interested in your definition of understanding. It was in the home, and it was being taught
in the home.
Yeah.
Now, I wanted to go back for just a second because I feel like I left something just a little unclear. You know, discipline is probably best served when it doesn't have to take extremes, meaning to win the heart is the objective. And I want to be very clear that I'm not promoting corporal punishment as any kind of first line of where you're at.
The word discipline actually comes from the same root as disciple.
Yes.
When you're trying to create a disciple.
Yes, exactly. And if it's not with that in mind, if it's not with the love that my mother showed me when she disciplined me, I never doubted because, you know, my mother was such a beautiful, soft spirit that she would cry if we would fall out of the way lots of times, not to be seen. Sometimes I walked into the room with her in the laundry, and I'd see her crying, and I'd say, "What's wrong, Mom?" She just pour out her heart of how much she was trying to win the hearts of us, and
the kids, the heritage of the Lord.
It was beautiful. So I don't want to get the impression that's actually the last line of defense, not the first. It's like.
And there is a place for discipline and discipleship.
Discipleship. And it doesn't need to be with the rod, so to speak.
And everyone's going to have to decide.
So I want to be very clear with that before I move on. Okay, now let's just move on to Ecclesiastes. Ecclesiastes, when we jump out of the work of Proverbs, which is kind of the law of attraction, kind of this idea that you reap what you sow. And in Ecclesiastes, we kind of get a reality check. Doesn't always seem to work. Sometimes good people lose a child. Sometimes good people lose a business. Sometimes good people, all different kinds of things happen in the world. And sometimes we have a tendency to go, oh, God must not love me. Or when these things happen, or when these, what appears to be random acts of, what's the word I'm looking for? Random acts of tragedy happen. Okay. Mm-hmm. We have a tendency to say, God must not love me, or we excuse it off as he's punishing me.
Well,
and Job flies in the face of that, but we're going to move on.
Right, so. And I was just going to say, in Ecclesiastes, it's not like they go agnostic or no God, or even, or atheist or anything like that. He doesn't pull the humanistic point of view. In Ecclesiastes, he's more the guy that realizes there's a God, but he's kind of cynical about the way things go down.
Well, we're going to get there, actually. Okay. So you're kind of seeing it. So in Ecclesiastes 1, verses 2 and 4, he basically is saying, vanity of vanities, saith the preacher, vanity of vanities, all is vanity. What profit hath a man of all his labors, which he taketh under the sun? One generation pass away and another generation cometh, but the earth abide forever. So what he's really saying by this is, you know, death's kind of the big equalizer. We work really hard for our, maybe if we're really, really good for 95 years or whatever the case is, and then we leave it all behind. And, you know,
the cynic is doing a reality check. Wait a second.
It's not always. And so what he's really saying is it's all vanity. I mean, what we do every day is kind of vanity, but he doesn't leave it there. And I'm not going to leave it there, but I'm just going to give you a little teaser of where we're going to go. And that is that it kind of brings us to the place of doing what God says and making everything one eternal now. What that means is, yes, we plan, we work, we do, we try to provide, we do all the things we try to do, but don't forget to enjoy the moment.
It shouldn't always be for the pie in the sky.
Yeah, don't forget to enjoy the moment.
Smell the flowers.
Yeah, smell the flowers, do the things along the way. Even throughout all this, don't get too caught up in what's playing out. Because you might just miss
the moment.
The moment. And moments are beautiful. So in Ecclesiastes, there's this word of that's in the Hebrew, which is hevel. And I didn't take the time to put this out in the Hebrew because, truthfully, you know, some of our lectures get really long when we go into all the detail. And truthfully, they give us so much to cover in a come follow me lesson that you just can't do it. You kind of have to jump across the top of the waves. But this word hevel actually is translated as vapor. Some people like to say smoke, but vapor is probably more accurate. It's like a cloud. So what he's saying is that's what the word vanity is translated from, is this word hevel, which is vapor. That means it's kind of all temporary. So well, really, what isn't temporary?
You can imagine someone like blowing a smoke ring, and they have a ring of smoke or a bubble ring, like under, if you're diving. We go diving,
I used to blow rings.
You blow bubble rings and everything. But if you try to grab it.
It just destroys it. You can't really possess the moment.
Was it a real ring? Because when you touch it,
it's gone.
So this is the hevel in the Hebrew. It's like smoke. If you try to grab it, it
can you grab a cloud?
Exactly.
You know, or do you just enjoy looking at a cloud?
Right.
Does it have substance? Yes, but it's
exactly
it's all of that.
But life is hevel.
Life is hevel, meaning it's kind of.
Can you grab it? Can you hold on to it?
Yeah, you can't really hold on to it. So he introduces the idea that there's an author and a teacher, and the teacher is the one telling most of the story, and then the author comments.
So this is really cool. This is Solomon orchestrating the arguments of whether or not God is whether or not good really wins, maybe.
Yep.
By creating these two characters.
And you know, you could argue, some people say it was King Solomon that wrote it, but you can't really know for sure, but you do know that he compiled all the stuff together.
Right.
He kind of brought it all together.
In the voice of these characters.
Okay, yeah. Kind of, he was the abridger.
Right.
Kind of like Norman did for the Book of Mormon to a degree or whatever. So anyway, that being said, he that's kind of where it comes from. And the basic goal of the author is to let the teacher deconstruct all the ways we can find that we think are hearing their purpose. And he basically picks it apart.
He
basically says, you can go for wealth, you can go for pleasure, you can go for career, you can go for status, but it's all hevel. It's all vapor.
And in some ways, he kind of tries to deconstruct this character in Ecclesiastes. He tries to deconstruct what the wisdom person was saying.
And it almost
seems
like they're the yin and the yang.
Yeah.
The heads and the tails.
It's really
so Proverbs is heads and Ecclesiastes is tails.
But if you didn't realize that Ecclesiastes was the second half of Proverbs, you might, you just read Ecclesiastes. This might be
kind of depressing. Yeah. Because he's trying to bring it back to a realness that it's kind of, no matter all of our good works, we do the right things and we expect the right rewards to come back. But sometimes we expect it on the short term. It's kind of like drinking a glass of chocolate milk. Maybe not the best thing for you, but it tastes good right now. And that's kind of what this argument is about.
I can't classify that as smelling the roses, okay? In the moment with my chocolate.
Chocolate.
Sorry.
Anyway, maybe you aren't a lover of chocolate.
but in Proverbs, it's the more optimistic point of view. You know, do this, teach your kids, and they're all going to choose. And you're
all going to go
wait a minute. It didn't quite
play out that way. Well, and Proverbs almost leads you to say, teach the child in his youth, and he'll come back to it. Well, maybe.
And sometimes we beat ourselves up with problems.
Well, I know
if the kids don't find then God, then
failure.
When we mess that up, But remember that Proverbs is like the one side of it. Ecclesiastes is the other side of the coin. Right?
And what it is this concept in Ecclesiastes is that time, we have all these efforts, but 300 years from now, who's going to care? Okay.
We're all going to die.
we're all going to die, and it's going to ashes to ashes, the whole concept. And so we have all these wealth, career, status, all these different things, pleasure we do. And it all just doesn't matter.
In time a long gobbles time. Everything. Time it reminds me of all. The Hobbit yeah. and the riddles. Yeah.
So, you know, conceptually, he's kind of throwing water on the Proverbs concept, maybe, but not really. Because what you got to do is take the whole of it into account and realize none of us are in for the short game.
Actually, they're going to both come up with the same conclusion. The Proverbs wisdom and the Ecclesiastes cynic point of view, they're going to come to the same conclusion.
And that is fear God and do what he says, because that is the only place.
That's the only security in any of it. Yeah.
It's the only place that isn't vanity in the long haul. Okay. So when we move.
But our cynics are going to love Ecclesiastes. Yeah, they really do hit all those points.
So anyway, Ecclesiastes is a little dry. Dark, or maybe dark's the wrong word, a little gloomy, because it says, hey, death's the great equalizer. You know, we're all going to die. You know, and that sounds, it's kind of a cliche word. Oh, we're all going to die. No, anyway, so I'm going to just say that death, though, is kind of the equalizer. There isn't any prophet. Well, I won't, that's not true. But there, most of the prophets have died and will die if they haven't already. And they will go through a transition. All of us will go through this equalizing step of progression.
Right. And I don't think that in Ecclesiastes it's meant that you should give up hope. He's never saying that.
No.
He's just doing a realistic take that time
gobbles it all up.
Death and hevel, this mortality, is smoke.
Yeah. It's, and what that really is saying is pay attention to the important stuff. Pay attention to those beautiful moments of sunshine. Pay attention to that dance. Pay attention to that song. Pay attention to those beautiful things in life that transcend time and death. There are many things that transcend time and death. And so in conclusion, in the book of Ecclesiastes, and I'm giving you kind of this overview.
Before you get to the conclusion. You know, in some ways, it's like one of our favorite sayings. It says, work like you don't need the money.
Oh, yeah.
Dance like nobody's watching. And love like you've never been hurt.
Yeah. We used to say that as an affirmation a lot in my life.
Right.
We actually wrote a family affirmation where we went through it.
That's kind of fear God. And so keep his commandments.
I don't know if you caught all that. Work like you don't need the money. Dance like nobody's watching. Love like you've never been hurt. Those concepts mean, hey.
I mean, live now.
Take.
For what?
Grab, seize the moment of the good things. Now, it doesn't mean seize the moment to terrorize or seize them. You know, we're talking seize the moment to smell the flowers. To fear God. Yeah. So in conclusion, fear God and keep his commandments. This is the duty of man, per se. For God
will bring every deed into judgment, every hidden thing, whether good or evil.
So
in the long run.
Yeah. So it's just a beautiful thing when you put it all together. It's like the heads and the tails. It's the same coin. It's just saying, hey, do the right things, because in the long haul, it's what does count.
And with the law of attraction, you know, if anything's going to work out in life, probably doing the right thing and keeping the commandments, that's your best chance for bringing out a good result.
Well, in the long
right?
term, it is going to be true.
And,
okay?
and even it,
so you know, I'm just showing this whole picture, and then I'm going to move on out of it. But so life is kind of seems kind of random, you know, as we drop our little existence into the. I don't even know, peg game or whatever here, and it drops down. It turns out all differently all the way along the way. And sometimes we don't even understand why it goes different. Why do sometimes we go bankrupt? Why do these different things happen to people? Some get wealthy. Some go bankrupt. Some have security. Some die. And, you know, some have honor. And all of these things seem random. But really, it's all part of a grander picture.
I was going to bring attention to the fact that this is from a video clip called put on the Wisdom Literature by the Wisdom Series by Bible Project.
Yeah. Fantastic. Some of this stuff is really good.
Fantastic explanation of what's going on in Proverbs, Ecclesiastes, and the book of Job.
So then shall the dust return to the earth as it was, and the spirit shall return unto God who gave it. Vanity of vanities, saith the preacher, all is vanity. Moreover, because the preacher was wise, he still taught the people knowledge. Yea, he gave good heed and sought out and set in order many proverbs. The preacher sought to find out acceptable words, and that which was written was upright, even the words of truth. Okay, so moving on, let's just go through this. You're seeing that what the conclusion in Ecclesiastes is, hey, do the right thing anyway, because in the long run, it's gone to be true. Proverbs is going to be true if you just lengthen out the time frame, if you just extend time out. The words of the wise are as goads. Right. Okay, goads means when you goad somebody, you know, you kind of
poke them,
prod a cow. And as nails fastened by the master of assemblies, which are given from one shepherd. Farther, by these, my son, be admonished of making many books, there is no end. And much study is a weariness of the flesh. Are we weary sometimes of our study?
I don't know.
I think sometimes, but not always. Sometimes it's a joy.
This must be the other side of the coin,
right? Yeah, sometimes it's complete joy. In fact, most of the time it's complete joy. But there are times when, you know, we take a break. We have to, you know, we're actually going to take a break this next week. Anyway, let us hear the conclusions of the whole matter. Fear God and keep his commandments, for this is the whole duty of man. For God shall bring every work into judgment and every secret thing, whether it be good or whether it be evil. So he's just basically telling us, hey, you don't have to worry about it. It's going to take care of itself. And I'm going to show you why here in a minute. So when we think of the Wisdom Series and we think of Proverbs and the different layout in these things, and we think of Ecclesiastes, the reality check that it doesn't always seem to work. Well, what's the last book in the wisdom literature? Well, it's Job, where the apparent contradiction, it is the long-term results that God is looking for. Because in a sense, Job is an apparent contradiction to Proverbs. It's actually almost as saying, hey, Proverbs, you know, isn't work. Not only did Job was a just and perfect man, he is blessed of great riches. Satan obtains leave of the Lord to tempt him and try him.
So he's your classic example of, I did everything Proverbs said,
and it didn't work.
It was all hevel. It was all vanity. It all went away like smoke.
But yet, in the long term, did it. And there we go to this next concept here in the book of Ecclesiastes. Vanity of vanities, saith the preacher. Vanity of vanities is all vanity. This is back to the first verse we started on. What profit hath a man of all his labors, which he taketh on his son? One generation passeth away, and another generation cometh, but the earth abideth forever. So as we go through life, if we choose to exalt ourselves and place ourselves above others, then the whole law of equal and opposite reactions is going to take us up while we push, and then it's going to drop us down below where we were before, because it's just the law of attraction a different way of looking at it.
Nephi? You're going to Nephi? Go ahead.
I am in a minute, but I'm just...
I was going to Jesus. Okay. Jesus said, he who exalteth himself will be abased, but he who abases himself
shall be exalted.
Will be exalted.
So this whole concept, as we reverse it, to everything there is a season and a time to every purpose under the sun, a time to be born, a time to die, and a time to plant, and a time to pluck up that which is planted. So usually God's pattern, instead of trying to ascend ourselves, God's pattern is to a descent, to ascend. And in a sense, as we come into this transitional period.
So this would be the condescension
of God.
Of God.
Yeah.
That he would descend.
In order to ascend.
And
to help us
ascend with him.
Exactly.
Right.
So this whole concept that we're headed into in the times we're in, it looks pretty scary out there as we watch all the things happening around us. And we look at this descent we are in as a world. It can be terrifying sometimes. But understand, we're about to ascend into a millennial day. And it is unfortunate. I don't know. It's a law given to us in the Book of Mormon. Isaac Newton discovered for every action, there's an opposite equal reaction. It is an eternal law that for every action, there's an opposite and equal reaction. And if you don't believe so, go to Nephi. And let's look at the answer right here. Behold, he offered himself a sacrifice for sin to answer the ends of the law. We just said it was a law. Unto all those who have broken hearts and contrite spirit, and unto none else can the ends of the law be answered. This is the Lord offering himself a sacrifice for sin. Who was innocent? And he allowed himself to descend so that we might all ascend with him. Wherefore, he is the first fruits unto God, insomuch as he make intercession for all the children of men, that they might believe in him shall be saved. And because of the intercession for all men come unto God. Wherefore, they stand in the presence of him, to be judged of him according to the truth and the holiness which is in him. Wherefore, the ends of the law which the Holy One have given unto inflicting of the punishment which was affixed, which punishment that is affixed is in the opposition to the happiness, opposition to that of the happiness which is affixed, to answer the ends of the atonement. And here's the big famous verse. For it must needs be that there be opposition in all things. If not so, my firstborn, he's speaking to his son in the wilderness, righteousness could not have been brought to pass, neither wickedness, neither holiness, neither misery, neither good nor bad. So what we have here is an understanding that he's saying, hey, this is an eternal law. So I have this cool picture that we're going to transform into. And as you see it here, if you were to take the upper scale off of that picture, that upper two rocks, justice doesn't seem to be just. Let's pretend for just a moment that that first line there of below justice is this life. And it doesn't seem just. If you're that little rock, this big guy over here has got all the gold or got all the popularity or whatever the case, and you're this little rock, and you know, it just doesn't seem just as you look at that scale. But as you take the veil away or whatever, you see that justice is balanced in an upper level. Now, I want to just take that. So when you take the whole of it, then justice is there. Okay? So let's just look at this again. In this life, the scale looks terribly out of balance. It looks terribly unjust. And by this visual picture, God is not just. But you notice there, the veil? If I take the veil and I make it thin and I remove it, all of a sudden the picture changes. An eternal progression in eternity, and to eternity, all of a sudden, the one on the right moves on into eternity. The one on the left is stopped. It's locked in. It can't move. So when we think of justice, and we think of all these things, take off the lens of this life. Take off the lens of immediate satisfaction. Take off those lenses and let's look at the long game, the end game. And I've said that before.
And then Job in the end game.
Yeah, and Job in the end game.
Had double of everything that he had when he went into this experience.
Yeah, so you take this veil away and all of a sudden the picture changes because now all of a sudden one side goes on to eternity and the other stops cold in its tracks. So, you know, this is just a beautiful example of what I'm talking about.
I wanted to mention one more thing, though, when you were talking about the equal and the opposite reaction of the descent in the Davidic covenant. It's amazing when you wrap your head around the fact that the more righteous and the more holy and the more innocent the one that's willing to do the offering, the greater the sphere of influences, and the further he descends, just think of that equal and opposite. It just makes you just try to wrap your head around who Jesus was and what he did in order
on purpose.
Yes,
he chose him on purpose. So back to this Hebrew beginning and realizing that these concepts of the gospel just flow, just like this Hebrew chapter in Proverbs
1 and 2.
That it just flows from one to the next until you receive from the word understanding. And that just becomes a beautiful picture for us to realize that this is all part of an incredibly
grand design
to make you and I, how does he say it? My work and my glory to bring to pass the immortality and the eternal life of man. So the books of wisdom are all about helping us see from good works to descent to ascent. It helps us see the whole process, but take off the glasses of mortality.
And don't you love that it ends with Job and that he has double of everything, and it isn't because of he deserved it and he was right. It was because God loved him, and that was what God planned for them, him the
whole,
whole time.
Yep. And that it was an equal opposite reaction, yeah, in a sense. He descended such that the equal and opposite reaction, and it's all there. Anyway, so this has been wonderful. I've shared with you these topics, and, you know, just understand, we can never
exhaust this.
Yeah. So every time we give one of these classes, it's all about just catching the beauty of the tops of the waves sometimes. Mm-hmm. Anyway, so just with that said in mind,
wisdom.
I had a hard time with that. Sorry. Chokmah, wisdom. It all comes from life. It comes from experience. That's what it says in that big phrase. Experience is the way to wisdom. You are here to experience. We're not here necessarily to be wealthy. We're not here to all of the things you might think for pleasure. But none of them are wrong. It's not wrong to have wealth. It's not wrong to have joy. It's not wrong to enjoy a flower. In fact, the whole point is enjoying the journey. And this picture of the Milky Way in this lens is all about. In the ancient Hopewell cultures, or culture, it is about
the path of souls.
The path of souls.
Back to the fathers.
Back to the fathers. It's really beautiful. It's been great. Thank you. Like I said, to know wisdom and understanding is what we're trying to do here. And that's what the message of Proverbs is all about. Ecclesiastes episode 36. And thank you.
And don't forget to beef up for Isaiah. It's coming.
Yep. So here we go. And have a wonderful week.